Hello and welcome to the Flying Frisbee podcast with me, Dominic Frisbee. Today I'm sitting having a chat with my friend Campbell Smythe. He's from Perth, Australia, but he's passing through London promoting his new company, which is called Fitzroy Metals.
Fitzroy Minerals.
It's an exploration company exploring some assets in Chile. We're just going to talk more generally about the state of junior mining and where we think things are. It's been a pretty tough last few years. Where do you think we are, Campbell? I should say Campbell's finger is very much on the pulse. He's right at the coalface of this industry. Where do you think we are, Campbell, in the grand scheme of things?
It's at a really interesting stage. We have seen a bear market that's lasted for probably 3 years, I think, in junior mining. Australia's had some windows in that period where we've had at least lithium companies, for an example, be successful. And people have been able to raise money throughout that period. But the TSX has had a terrible time. I mean, I passed through Vancouver on the way through here, and it was a graveyard in the brokerages. Like, you could have heard a pin drop.
Why do you think Canada's been so bad?
I don't know. I think the Canadian brokers went very much into wealth managers as opposed to their real job, which is to raise money for companies. And so they changed their business, and as a result, a lot of people were directed towards high tech and large cap US stocks, because obviously the risk is a lot less than the exploration sector. But I remember sort of the famous old names in the brokerages, and they were particularly good at raising money for small companies, and these people just aren't around anymore. So the talent that I've sort of seen in the industry has very much shifted. Like in Australia, we've had some great discoveries recently, and there's been market cap built in these companies, which I think has made the ability to raise capital continue in Australia. And I mean, the companies I'm thinking of specifically, like Patrick Battery Metals, was a very big lithium discovery last year. And it was actually a Canadian discovery, but ironically all owned and started by Australians. And they relisted it back on the ASX to give themselves more liquidity and more market cap. And it was a terrific success. Several of my friends did very well out of that. And we've had other areas like rare earths, which have been a little flash in the pan, but a huge amount of companies were spawned out of that. But I think the big themes which we need to think about is, where is the money going at the minute? And the EV sector has been a focus theme for commodities and mining for probably 2 to 3 years now,
and maybe longer.
I think
that story's dead.
I don't believe it's dead, but it's definitely having a hiatus, and people have felt that these companies were extremely overvalued, and no one really understood the difficulty in permitting. So you might make a large lithium or rare earth discovery, but the time it's going to take you to get it permitted and built and financed and producing, that sector is so volatile that you may have missed the window. I mean, for instance, Albemarle, I noticed, has just actually raised a large amount of capital in the last week, because obviously its costs were out of control for its plants that it was increasing size on. And its biggest mines are America and Western Australia, where I come from. And I actually went down to have a look at their mine, the town was a wreck. They hadn't spent a dime on it, and I could tell that company was definitely not interested in investing anything. So it's fascinating business. I think that...
So the company would normally invest in the town and the...
Well, you'd expect some wealth to be redistributed there, but that company's not liked, and it's definitely not part of that community. So while it has this massive lithium mine, I can see the head office is more focused elsewhere, and that is a symptomatic, I think, of how difficult it is to build production in new countries. So particularly for foreign companies. So we've had like several big lithium companies start up in Western Australia, and that's been a success story. But typically, it would take 10 years to build a mine in these places. So permitting has dragged things out. Financing has definitely dragged them out. And I think that what we're seeing right now is in a lot of commodities, they're reaching critical supply. So demand, I think, in the EV sector has been massive. There has been massive growth in it, obviously. But now growth expectations are getting adjusted. But the real drag on has been actually the ability of new companies to actually fill that gap. So people were expecting large mines to start in the lithium patch, and that's what's dragged down, I think, the price. But what we're actually noticing is that a lot of these mines are now getting permitting issues, or the actual main companies are now sort of shelving plans for expansions. So I think that for instance, in the lithium sector particularly, where we have had the possibility of a large increase in supply, a lot of that is now being removed. So the market's now digesting this, and the lithium price has pulled back from $80,000 a tonne for lithium carbonate to, I think, it bottomed at $12,000. So it was a massive fall. I believe that's actually now reversing, and the price is now finding a low, and we're probably going to have it float back up to 20,000 LCE, and that's where about the marginal cost of production in China is. So that's an interesting sector right now. So I'm looking at lithium particularly, because there are quite a few juniors that have been really, really decimated in the last few months. But we in Australia, it's obviously the money flow is changing. There's one of the themes that I've noticed in the last few months is copper is now very much the story of the moment. I believe that is going to continue. And Mr. Friedland is obviously one of the big proponents in that sector. And Ivanhoe is obviously one of his big stories there. Copper, I'm noticing, is starting to look like it wants to break out. We've had really, really, really stable copper price for a long time. And as we've just seen in the gold price, suddenly these things can change. And whereas gold was struggling to break 2,000, suddenly we're into the 2100s, looking at 2200, and it's happened very quickly. So we might be looking at a world where copper breaks out too. And if that happens, there's a real lack of valuation in a lot of these sectors. But I looked at the copper stories, particularly in the PDAC, and they really are cheap. There are some interesting juniors there. But I also just think the whole sector is so depressed right now that you could probably throw darts at stocks and probably make money in the mining patch.
Because, give us a couple of copper names we should be looking at.
I'd have to look up the juniors in particular. I don't want to tout my own junior because that's obviously a copper story. But it's the best thing is just literally talk to your broker and ask for some copper names. If you want me to research it, I can do that, Dominic. I know gold better.
So let me ask you a question, Campbell. Every couple of years, a new hot commodity comes along. And in my time in the resources sector, I've seen it be potash, I've seen it be helium, I've seen it be graphene, I've seen it be uranium. And if you are able to identify, rare earths is another one, and if you're able to identify what the sort of, or the battery metals as well, when a cobalt was a good one, lithium, if you're able to identify the sort of the hot commodity of next year, and you know, there might only be three or four companies listed that even deal in that commodity. Tin has had its day in the sun. What's the next hot commodity?
The one that I think I would like to see most be the hot commodity is gold, because it has been so long since we've had a gold bull market. And I was having a look at the valuations of some of the majors. They are absolutely cheap as. I mean, they are trading at their 52-week lows, despite the fact we've had a gold price breakout. I mean, Newmont put out catastrophic earnings a few weeks ago, which made all the institutions dump it. But then you look at the operations it has around the world, and at a $200 higher gold price, they are making good money now. So I think a lot of these stocks are very leveraged and to a rising gold price, and it just wouldn't take much to get a lot of money to turn back into the sector. I've been hearing anecdotal evidence of big fund managers selling tech and starting to buy mining companies.
Druckenmiller.
Well, that's one of them, but there are others. But it just seems that there's attention starting to go back to a sector which really has been forgotten. And in the gold sector, I mean, there's a lot of names. It's a lot. It's a very crowded patch in terms of small companies. But if just for the average investor looking at the gold sector, you could buy the majors, Newmont, Barrick, New Gold. I mean, there's Goldfields is obviously a very cheap stock too.
Agnico.
These are quality names which you won't lose your shirt on. There's also the royalty companies, Royal Gold, Franco-Nevada. If someone wants something spicier, there's Metalla Royalty, which is obviously a smaller company, but that's a really interesting stock because it's got so many different royalties, and in a rising bull market of gold, it's very leveraged to it. So the high on that stock was $18 and it's sitting at three or something insane. But obviously then you start going down the patch of small producers and exploration stocks. I do have two stocks which I liked from the PDAC. They're both Australian. One was Firefly Gold, and they just bought the Ming Mine in Canada. And it's an exceptionally high grade operations, gold and copper. So that's a project going into production. The market cap's about 150 million. It's run by serious people in Australia who are very experienced in operating mines and delivering takeovers. So that's a good, interesting stock. And the other one was...
How are they able to take it over?
They raised $50 million in a bear market to buy an asset, which I thought was really interesting.
And who had the asset?
It was sold by Gold. The selling company was Gold Hunter. And the main principal in it is Steve Parsons out of Australia. And Steve's a very good operator. The other company which I really like is Southern Cross Gold, which is an ASX company, but it's also it's owned by Mawson Gold on the TSX. So it was a distribution from it. And they've got the highest grade discovery I've seen in the world recently. I just saw an intercept of something like 300 metres of 6 grams. It's extraordinary.
Where's that?
That's in Victoria.
Okay.
Market cap is again about 150 million bucks. So These are big liquid juniors, but they're interesting stocks, and they're the sort of companies I would expect to see really, really big performance in if we have a rising gold market. So
I get the gold story, yeah. But I want everyone always talks about gold. What is there? Can you think of a commodity nobody's talking about? Platinum or something?
Well. The thing is, I just think we're afraid of a gold bull market. We've been disappointed so much. But the facts of life is that it broke out from the biggest chart range I've seen in anything for literally last week. So we've been waiting for it to break to an all-time high suddenly, and it just did. So,
yeah, when nobody was looking.
So the question is...
It was the quietest breakout of all time.
So
as well,
the question is it meaningful? Is it the start of something? I just think we need to pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it happening because the US dollar's starting to weaken? Are they forecasting something coming up in the capital markets? That's going to be a big event. Perhaps I was hearing again yap about bond yields are starting to fall. There's stress in the repo market. There's banks talking about issues. Maybe gold's sensing that. Maybe it's just following Bitcoin. We just don't know. Anyway, if you just ignore all the noise and go, wow, it's just popped to a new all-time high, well, that's interesting. It's time to pay attention to the stocks because they're incredibly cheap.
Mm.
And they're at like lows which you'd expect in a bottom of a gold bear market rather than breaking out to a new high.
So there's definitely a catch-up trend.
There's something. But the other thing actually to pay attention to is the cost of everything production-wise has gone up. So the gold industry, I think it needs a $2,000-plus gold price to make any money. I mean, the operating costs have probably risen 30% in the last 2 years. So when a company puts out a feasibility study and says it's got an all-in sustaining cost of $1,200, it's just nonsense.
Hmm.
I mean, I'd look at it and go, it's more like $1,600 or higher. So when you factor in the cost of capital, and which is 10 to 15%, and you factor in
equipment,
well, everything. It's just, and it just, wages have gone up. Everything's gone up. So I think the gold business these days is a low margin business until we get a big gold price move. So maybe there's just reaching that point where we've got tight markets and things are interesting. So I prefer to keep it simple. Gold price is going up. Let's own some stocks.
So one of the things the argument that you hear is just how important exploration and development is, because without spending on exploration and development, there will be no new mines, and therefore there will be a shortage of metals, and therefore prices of metals will go up. And I think it's fair to say, with a few exceptions, generally speaking, exploration and development has been probably underfunded for maybe 10 or 12 years.
10 years, yeah.
But that doesn't seem to have muted into actual metal shortages and rising metals prices. So is it? Do we need a few more years of underfunding, or is exploration development just actually not that important in the grand scheme of things?
I think it's extremely important. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in this business. The majors are not replacing their reserves. I mean, that's been a theme for probably a decade. The other thing is grade is declining. So world copper grade, I think, is running at something about 0.5% right now, average grade per ton. Gold, the average grade of gold produced is something like 1 gram, and I think that's probably reducing to 0.9 soon. So the cost of actually producing all these commodities is rising, and the grade is falling, and there's no great new discoveries being made. So if you combine that with obviously political issues like embargoes on Russia and some of the emerging market things, there's not a lot of new supply coming out. So I think from a production point of view, there's not any major great new mines being put in production. I mean, I was in the exploration sector in the early 2000s, and there were some terrific large discoveries made, which are in structures called porphyries, but porphyries are low grade. They're massive tonnage, but they're low grade. And one of the actual issues with that is that it's billions of dollars to put them in production, which mining companies are now unwilling to do. So the one theme I keep sort of thinking about is grade matters. So those two stocks I mentioned are some of the highest grade and best run and best management and best ore bodies I've seen in the market. Mm. So that's why I like them.
Grade matters when capital's tight.
It doesn't
matter so much in a bull market, does it?
We all know that if gold suddenly runs up $500 in the next year, there'll be a lot of capital raised. But I think right now capital's very tight. I mean, I'm raising money for my small junior, and it's not easy. And I know that there's not the big funds out there writing checks for exploration yet. So we're in a market where I think there's experienced capital cautiously looking at it, and high net worth investors are paying attention. It's definitely not a retail story. Retail's looking at tech and AI and all sorts of stuff like Bitcoin. But this is definitely feeling like the early stages of a bull market. I'm cautiously optimistic. So put gold on your list. I think that's definitely worth paying attention to. And I will come up with a couple of copper stories for you to look at as well, Dominic.
So give us...
And uranium, obviously. That's thematic too.
The problem I have with uranium is I get the uranium story. I get the importance of nuclear. But it's a classic case of own the metal, not the mine, because the uranium mines, all those, I think in the Sprott ETF, there are like 33 mining companies, two of which are producers.
Mm.
And I just don't think the other 30 or 31 will ever see production for another 10 years. So you're just buying, you know, yes, the perceived value of their resource might go up, but you're just buying net drains on capital.
We had a production story begin this year in Australia, Boss Energy, and that was a very good stock. That's got a market cap nearly of $2 billion now, which illustrates sort of what a uranium mine can yield if you actually actually have a success. There was a,
but it's a permitting issue as much as anything, isn't it?
One of the stars of the show was Kanalaska Uranium. They had the highest grade drill intercept I've seen for a long time, but it's at 800 meters depth, and it's MacArthur River type grade, as in nearly 10%. And it's be a long time before that becomes a project of note. But we've seen stocks like NexGen and Fission. I mean, they've been really good stories, and that's obviously been Athabasca based. So if it's Canadian Athabasca, maybe that can be put in production. If it's Australia in Northern Territory and South Australia, that can be put in production. But around the world, it's pretty difficult to put a uranium mine into production. Yeah, so I hear what you're saying. All these stocks do tend to have a big run-up. An old favourite of mine is Laramide.
I was just thinking of Laramide. And, like, you know, I like Mark. I ran a company with Mark Henderson. And you know, Laramide was maybe one of the biggest stars of that bull market in 2006.
It's had a massive run.
Yeah.
Right now.
Has it?
Yeah.
What is it now?
I think it's... I need to look it up. But it's something...
But it's still not going to produce anything for 10 years.
Well, the biggest issue Laramide's got is it's in Queensland, where you have a Labor government and a very anti-nuclear policy, but that doesn't seem to matter. I mean, I'm just being remiss. So I'll look it up for you right now. The stock's 80 cents. I thought I was about to say that.
Yeah, and, I mean, so it's gone from like 30 to 80, so it's not that amazing. I mean, it's good, but it's...
Yeah, but it's but I hear what you're saying. Like the Sprott uranium ETF is probably a logical way to play it.
I just think I own physical uranium.
I just don't think there's much in the way of uranium supplier in the world. It's another one of these tight commodities. I mean, I was debating this with someone the other day.
The other problem is a lot of Kazakh uranium can't get to market.
Yeah, Kazakh problem has got a big issue. So Laramide's gone from 36 cents to 80 cents. So, yeah. I mean, I think the bloom's off the rose there, maybe, unless we have a change in the uranium price.
Mm.
But it doesn't mean that there's not interesting stories. It's one to pay attention to. I mean, I like oil as a commodity. It's deeply unsexy. Children look at you like you're the devil if you say you like all stocks.
We need it
in everything. Oil supplies compounding 3% growth per year. That does not change. I'm always interested in production stories that are growing. I mean, a very well managed stock I know in this business is Hemisphere Energy, and Hemisphere's running on approximately four times cash flow, which is cheap for its sector. It pays a dividend of something like 7%. It's bought back 10% of its own stock this last couple of years, and it's about to have a big growth uptick with what's called a polymer flood being run on two of its operating wells, and that should have a big production increase as a result. So Hemisphere's HME on TSX, and that's an exceptionally managed junior in its sector. The oil patch, though, is tricky. You need to be a specialist. So if you're bullish on oil, you look at the majors, I think, initially.
Yep. So I came to your lunch yesterday. Campbell held a lunch yesterday for investors, doing a presentation about his company, Fitzroy Minerals. And I've got to say, Campbell, I was really impressed. Merlin Mar Johnson is your CEO. You're the chairman. You've got three potential assets, two in Chile and one in Argentina. Just give us like a minute overview. This is like 10 to 15 million market cap. It's a tiny explorer. It could be a 10 bagger, or it could go to, you know, could lose 60% of its value, as in the case with the explorers. But you sort of reduce the risk on it quite cleverly. You've kind of got three spins of the wheel, and you've got a geo who knows what he's doing. Just give us a quick overview of the company.
I thought I wasn't allowed to talk
about it. You weren't, but I felt guilty.
Well, I was looking for a project of substance, and I gave Merlin the remit last year to do that, and he came up with two great projects, both from the ex-head of Vale Exploration and in Chile. And so Gilberto Schubert is joining us next week as part of our board.
Mm-hmm.
And he will be advisory board, beg your pardon. And he's brought in a large copper asset, which is surrounded by majors. We will be drilling that this year. It's on a major structure surrounded by the fourth biggest mine in Chile, which is the Antofagasta main asset, and also Vasquitas, which is Los Andes to our south. So it's all on the same structure. That's in a
drill. How were you able to get it?
Because it came out of, basically it became out of relationships. Gilberto monitored the asset. It was in the Vale stable. When they dropped out of exploration in 2008, he kept relationships up with the landowner, who's now 80 years old, who now wanted to negotiate. He'd asked us a crazy price for it before, and then he became reasonable, and then now he's at 80 years old, he wanted to do a deal.
Mm-hmm.
So we were just lucky to get that. And another project we have, which I think is really interesting, is our epithermal gold system called Polymet, which is just down the road, and that was in production for the last few years in a small scale, but at a very high grade. And I always like watching geologists get excited. No, it's through adits. It was an underground mine between 10 and 30 grams.
Oh.
So they, and also 2 to 6% copper. So,
and artisanal or genuine?
No, this was actually in small scale production. They probably mined 100,000 tons a year, but they literally just went in the hill and followed the veins. So geologically, that's really interesting. We have an exploration target of about 1 million ounces on that, but that's just an exploration target. Merlin is going to be busy. My job is to raise money for this company, and I'm the largest shareholder, and I'm very pleased the way it's taking shape. Anyway, I'm not here to talk about that.
It's good that you've got a chief exploration geologist called Merlin.
There are so many jokes made about that, but he's exceptional. I mean, he was the Blakeney Capital fund manager. He's vastly experienced. He was HSBC's gold analyst, and he also is Crux Investors' company interrogator. So Merlin presents well. He's a great geologist. And
he came to my gold lecture and wrote me an email afterwards, making a number of corrections.
He's he reminds me I don't know much about this business sometimes, but I like working with him, and he's a pleasure. But look, I just think it's an exciting time. I mean, you're a Bitcoin specialist. You've had a wonderful run in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think it can carry on.
Yep, and we all know what the reasons for owning Bitcoin are. Some of those reasons are the same reasons for owning gold. I think that gold, I don't want to talk about it as a monetary metal, but just as a commodity, it's certainly at a point where I think it needs to be paid attention to. So if you ask me what I'm most interested in at the minute, it's going to be gold, it's going to be oil. I think uranium, I've got a couple of darts thrown at that sector, but really those are my focus.
So the mainstream ones.
And copper, obviously.
So I'm working on a new book about gold, and one of the things I've got to decide is what the future of gold is. And so I've got three or four scenarios. And one scenario is that, you know, over the last 100 years, we've gradually seen the demonetization of gold, if you like. And though it still maintains its role of store of value, and central banks still hold it and investors still hold it, it's hardly a medium of exchange at all now. In fact, recently Russia bought some drones off Iran, and it flew 2 tons of gold from Russia to Iran to pay for them. Can you believe it? But then you just see why it's not a good medium of exchange if you've got to fly 2 tons of gold. But so one scenario is that that process of demonetization continues and it becomes more and more irrelevant. And, you know, it's just a few cranky people like you and me and people who have it as jewellery. That's like the worst possible scenario.
But also, don't forget, we're in a world where suddenly the cash is becoming more and more difficult to use. Maybe gold is going to have a role.
Maybe. Yep. But let me give you the other scenarios. That's one negative scenario. One sort of slightly more positive scenario is that the accumulation of gold by the central banks in Asia, all those along the Silk Road, which have been the big buyers in the last few years, that continues, particularly as they look to diversify out of the dollar. Gold's a better store of value than the US dollar, so it makes sense for central banks to hold it. It's an asset that's nobody else's liability, so it has a role as a kind of insurance for your portfolio, and everyone has 5 or 10% of their portfolio in gold as insurance and hopes it doesn't go up, that kind of scenario. So that would be sort of slightly better than where we are now. scenario for gold. That's the sort of medium scenario. And then the third scenario is that, you know, global conflict intensifies. China decides that China and the US conflict intensifies between those two, and it starts to wage war on the US dollar. And it starts to be a bit more truthful about its gold holdings, which are much higher than it has previously said. And in the same way that the America uses the dollar as a weapon of war, as a tool of war, other America's rivals start to attack the dollar as a weapon of war, and America struggles. And as a result, fiat currency generally struggles. And I think, you know, if you go central banks, what are they going to go to? They're not likely to go to Bitcoin, because apart from anyone else, they're not going to want to hand money to all those obnoxious, geeky techno people that got in early. They're much more likely to go towards gold, which has got much more of a history. So in a funny kind of way, governments might be the saviour of gold. So that's the sort of third scenario. And then, you know, you go one stage further and go, China wants to have a rival to the US dollar. And so it you know, partially gold backs the yuan, because there's never been a global reserve currency in history that didn't start out backed by gold. They all ended up debased, but they all started out backed by gold. And so that's the kind of the most positive scenario for gold, the remonetization. So you've got remonetization at one extreme, insurance in the middle, and demonetization at the other extreme. Which of those three scenarios do you think is most likely?
My head's spinning after that big list, Dominic. All right, so my first instinct is, what is the reason for a gold price to rise? Usually it's because of credit stress. The main reasons historically have been interest rates declining, so the gold price looks forward to a declining interest rate environment. We have had 12 or more rate rises in most central banks around the world, and I think the market is now starting to build in the expectation that interest rates are going to fall. So we are approaching that as a trigger point. So maybe that's what the gold price is sensing. In addition, banks have historically been divesting gold from their reserves, but now debt has become such an issue, and I think the risk of debt is rising. Maybe they're starting to change their mind on what they actually need to as insurance to bolster their balance sheet. So rather than retail investors owning it as insurance for themselves, central banks are starting to think about this as an idea too. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a currency around the world be backed by gold. I mean, I've seen a couple of attempts in Bitcoin. I've seen in small countries, but also you've got major issues in countries like Argentina, where Milei's got to stabilize a very unstable currency. So maybe there'll come a scenario where that is possible, and he's capable of it. So we don't need much of a change for gold to suddenly go positive. So it has been a point where I think a lot of people have just forgotten about it as a useless relic, to quote Keynes. And it we're at a stage where I just think maybe the pendulum is starting to tip back, and all you have to do is just think of it mildly positively. And if it becomes an investment metal, then the demand will obviously change enormously for it. So I think as a commodity, just common sense, just looking at it, like what does it cost to mine an ounce of gold? It's probably all in after capital, nearly close to $2,000 an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at a low margin business, so the gold price has to rise to provide growth to this industry, and reserves are declining. So commodity-wise, I think it's becoming tighter, but obviously there's a lot of factors around the world that could change the demand side of it.
So if my three scenarios were A, B and C, with A being remonetization and B being insurance and C being demonetization, I'm going to say that your answer is B+.
I'm going to say B+, yeah. I just think the world is unstable, and who knows what's going to happen this year. We've got the likelihood of a change in party in America. We're seeing changes in governments around the world. So the world is feeling a little unstable. There is definitely changes going on. So maybe politically there's things going to happen. But I do believe that we're facing a market which is incredibly overvalued and concentrated in some names. So at some point, Wall Street will have another hiccup. And will gold provide insurance? Well, you'll probably lose less in gold than you will in tech, is my feeling.
Yep, and you'll lose less in gold than you will in fiat as well.
Precisely.
Campbell, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. And so thanks very much for coming on the show. And why don't you give out the website address for Fitzroy Minerals as we close?
It's very easy. FitzroyMinerals.com.
Good stuff.
Okay. Thanks, Dominic. I appreciate it. And look, I'm excited about this year. I think it's the first year I've seen in this sector the PDAC has been positive in the last week. There was definitely an air of optimism. I feel that the last couple of years have been pretty tough, and this has been a really interesting trip.
And thank you very much for listening to that interview. If you liked it, please rate and review us on your podcast app, and I'll be back with another show very, very soon. Until next time, goodbye.